Good evening. I'm pleased to be here today to talk about one of our studies. The presentation title is Does Less Local Control Over Alcohol Policy Making Limit What Cities Can Do to Restrict Malt Liquor Sales? I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Rhonda Jones-Webb, Pat McKee, Mark Miazga, and Dr. Tobin Nelson. I have no relationships to disclose. Some background information first. This is a study that looked at high alcohol malt liquor. And this is a very inexpensive beer that has much higher alcohol concentration than your typical beer. So the alcohol by volume is 6 to 10% versus 4 to 5% of a more typical type of beer. It's often sold in large containers, for example, in 40-ounce bottles. Some examples of some brands are Colt 45, Old English, Steel Reserve, Hurricane, Mickey's. Malt liquor is typically not consumed throughout the general population. It's usually within certain segments of the population. For example, we see more malt liquor use or consumption among African Americans versus whites. Malt liquor drinkers tend to be more likely to be homeless, unemployed, and receiving public assistance. We also see youth reporting more malt liquor use than older populations. One of the reasons we're concerned about malt liquor is that it's associated with heavier drinking, because of course it's higher alcohol content as well as in larger containers. And so the people consuming it are more likely to become intoxicated. Once we start increasing intoxication levels, we have an increased likelihood of a lot of different alcohol-related problems, including aggressive behavior and a variety of public safety issues. So we presume that this is a concern in many communities. The sub-study that I'm going to be talking about today is part of a larger study called Restricting Malt Liquor Beverages Project. This is a three-year study funded by the CDC. Dr. Rhonda Jones-Webb is the PI, and she's sitting kind of in the middle of the room over here. The objectives of the overarching study was to determine whether malt liquor is perceived as a problem by city officials, to assess the existence of local level restrictions on malt liquor sales and consumption, and to assess the city's efforts to adopt policies to restrict malt liquor sales. And then finally, we wanted to create a national malt liquor database of policy restrictions that might be useful to other communities. The first thing we did as part of this overall study was to conduct a telephone survey. We wanted to look at the 115 largest US cities, so scattered throughout the country, and find out about what malt liquor restrictions were in place across these communities. We attempted to survey two people within each community, one local official and one local law enforcement staff person, individuals that might know something about these malt liquor beverage restrictions. We had a 92% response rate and 41 states represented in the survey. The survey was conducted in summer 2008, so it's quite recent. We wanted to assess which communities had adopted the policies as well as those that have attempted to adopt the policies. And for those that did have a policy restriction in place, we wanted to understand the characteristics of those restrictions, so the type and the policy format. And in my next few slides, I'll talk more about what we mean by the type and policy format. What was interesting is when we had two respondents within a city tell us what was happening in their city, it wasn't always consistent. So we had to implement a fairly extensive verification process to say, well, if someone, one of them says there is a policy in place, to actually try to track down the written policy to verify that, in fact, there was one in place. And we verified that 36 cities in 16 states had malt liquor beverage restrictions. When we talk about specific or types of restrictions, we did find a great variety of types of restrictions across all these cities. In some cases, there were very specific restrictions that were closely tied to malt liquor beverages, so restricting specific types of alcohol or brands, chilled containers, because often those 40-ouncers are sold cold, so they're ready to go, and restricting the container sizes. We also found that some of the communities had more general restrictions, so banning or restricting glass containers or open containers or single containers. And while these were more general alcohol restrictions, many of the of our key informants in these communities said that they had implemented them to target malt liquor sales or fortifying wine sales. In terms of the policy formats, these restrictions were implemented in a variety of different ways or using different methods from a policy perspective. Some were through administrative rules. Excuse me. Some were through, I knew that was going to happen to me. It is the season. Some were in alcohol impact areas. Some were through land use restrictions, through CUPs or conditional use permits. Excuse me. Hopefully my voice will come back in just 1 second. Some were done through license conditions. So they said you could have an alcohol license if you put certain things in place, certain restrictions. Some were through citywide ordinances, and some were through voluntary agreements. As we were implementing the overarching study, one of the questions that came up for us is that we understood that there were differences across states in terms of what amount of authority local communities can have to put restrictions in place. So in alcohol, we might think about it from two perspectives. One is who has the authority to license alcohol establishments? In some cases, it's at the state level. Sometimes it's at the local level. Sometimes it's at both levels. There's great variability across the US and states. And in some cases, we talk about preemption. And that's where local communities cannot enact ordinances or other restrictions that are more restrictive than what's on the books at the state level. And this is a real issue, not just to alcohol. I mean, it's an issue with gun control and tobacco control and a variety of other public health areas. And it's something that we really struggle with because when there's preemption at the state level, it means the battle for policy change for public health is at the state level. And when you're battling industries, sometimes that battle is much tougher at the state level than at the local level. So oftentimes we make recommendations at the local level. So we wanted to look at whether or not states, communities located in states that had less local control and authority were still able to pass restrictions on malt liquor beverages. So that was one part of this, was just to assess the amount of local authority for alcohol control, and then to assess the number of malt liquor restrictions enacted by level of local authority. One of our first challenges was how to operationalize this, however. Ideally, you know, you'd look at the legal definition and find one sentence in each state statute that says this is the amount of local control that's in place. It's not that simple. It actually requires to completely answer the question, it would require fairly extensive original legal research, which is very time-consuming, difficult to do, and very expensive. Of course, ideally, we would find the perfect secondary source. Someone else has done all the work, and we can just use that secondary source to answer the question. An alternative way would be just to do a survey and ask people how much local control there is. There are downsides to the secondary sources in that we don't always know the quality of the research that was done. If we just ask people's perceptions about their estimate of local authority, oftentimes we're guessing that they would probably underestimate how much local authority there is. So for this study, we actually ultimately used two measures. While we were talking about how to measure this, we did find a secondary source. The National Highway Transportation Safety Administration had done some legal research and a survey of state ABC officials to create some categorization of the amount of control in terms of alcohol licensing. And they developed four categories. First, there were control states, and these are where the states actually, you know, run liquor stores, and all the licensing is done at the state level. So control states with exclusive state licensing. The others were licensed states, so individuals receive licenses to sell alcohol. The state's not the one selling the alcohol. But we have licensed states that have exclusive state licensing, licensed states that have dual state and local licensing, and licensed states that have exclusive local licensing. We also created a second measure that we developed, and in this case, we did rely on self-report. So we contacted the directors or legal staff at the state alcohol beverage control agencies with a 98% response rate. And we asked one specific question. We wanted them to rate the level of local authority that each of the states had. And we categorized them as no local authority for regulating alcohol sales, some local authority, considerable local authority, or complete local authority. The next thing was to look at those states where we had verified, or the cities where we had verified these restrictions, and cross that with these different measurements. First, looking at the NHTSA classification. Looking at the 27 cities located in states that were control states with exclusive state licensing, we found that 22% of those cities had enacted some type of restriction on malt liquor. Looking at the exclusive state licensing in the licensed states, there were 63 cities located in those types of states, and 28.6 or 29% of the cities had implemented a restriction. Looking at the dual state and local licensing, 30% of the cities that were in our study located in those types of states had implemented restrictions. And then looking at exclusive local licensing, where there was a lot of control, local control, 46% of the cities in our studies had implemented those type of restrictions. Now, using the other measure, where it was a state survey, looking at those cities that fill in states with no local authority, 25% of our cities had implemented malt liquor beverage restrictions. With some local control, 26% of the cities. Considerable local control was 57% of the cities. None of the cities were classified in states that had complete local control or authority. The conclusion, or at least a preliminary conclusion from this sub-study, is that a higher percentage of cities with more local control had malt liquor policies, which wasn't completely surprising. However, what was more surprising is that nearly one out of four cities that were located in states where they didn't have much local control in terms of licensing or authority had enacted some type of malt liquor control restrictions. In some preliminary analyses, I did look at the patterns, you know, looking at across these different types of states and the cities located in them, what type of restrictions, do we see a pattern? You know, so we're more likely to see certain types of restrictions on malt liquor in states that had more local control versus those that had less local control. And I really didn't find a pattern in terms of the type of restriction or the type of policy format. And I have to say I was surprised. I thought in the local control state, or in the state licensing systems, we would see more through land use, through the conditional use permits. And in just this quick look at it, I'm not seeing that pattern. But I do want to look at this a little bit more in depth as we move forward for the paper, the study. For implications for alcohol control, I think it's, first of all, that there are a number of cities that have, in fact, put restrictions on this type of alcohol. And even if you're in a state that has less control over alcohol licensing, clearly there are ways to put restrictions on this type of alcohol if it's creating a problem in your city. For other areas of public health, I think we need to do similar type work in the areas of gun control, tobacco control, et cetera, to find out what communities that are located in states where there is preemption, what have they done? Are there things that they can still do to affect those problems at a local level? I mentioned that one of our objectives was to create a database looking at these types of restrictions to disseminate this information. And in fact, the database is up and running. This is the site for it, and I think you know, it certainly had input on it when it was being developed, but I was using it as preparing for this presentation, and I have to say it was very easy to use, and so hopefully it's helpful to all of you in this audience. And then finally, that's located on another website, our main website for the alcohol epidemiology program, and if you do work in the area of alcohol, I encourage you to look at our website. We do disseminate our research findings on the website and any tools that we develop once we're ready to disseminate it. Thank you very much.